Odyssey celebrates Earth Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Wiggins America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm gonna need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like,
whatever, dude.
Hey! Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand.
You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
That takes us to Zero Edge, who asks, how long can it keep going? Now, the key is most past shutdowns were paired with a debt ceiling, which makes markets panic about treasury payments, which are the lifeblood of our Ponzi financial system. But the next debt ceiling doesn't hit until mid-2027. That removes the external pressure to cut a deal. So if the world's not ending, if markets aren't even noticing the shutdown, if Republicans are rising in the polls while Democrats are afraid of their Antifa base, nobody needs a deal. In theory, this means they can literally keep going until 2027.
Yeah, this is interesting stuff. I will say that. This is a long government shutdown now, and so we're getting into uncharted territory in some ways here at the beginning of November. Welcome to Wiggins America. Before we get too far into the budget talk, let's talk about Halloween. How was yours? Did you have a good Halloween? I am sort of glad that it's November. It seemed like October took a... You know what? I was going to say it took a long time. But it was just that last week of October that I kept thinking. It was probably because all the Halloween parties were the week before, because now this is November. but it just did seem like a long month to me. I did one cool Halloween thing. So on Halloween, we just did the typical trick-or-treating stuff. But we also, the week before Halloween, the weekend before, we went out to Eckert's and got some media passes. And we did the Jack's Lighted Trail. It's the first year that they've done that. I got to say, they do a pretty good job. That's a fun little, you know, excursion to just walk through. I love fall time stuff. I like actually holiday themed stuff, really, no matter what holiday it is. But I love October themed stuff. And I'm saying October because it's not necessarily Halloween. I just like the fall time stuff. And whether it's a hayride or like cooking stuff around a bonfire or whatever, I make sure to participate in something fall time every year, and this year it was Jack's Lighted Trail for us, because I just love that stuff, and I have to make time to do it. That's the thing. I know that a lot of people, when we talk about events, you guys are like, yeah, I'll go to that. Sounds good. You know, you got a little free time. You can do that. I'm just in that era where I have 2 11-year-olds and an 8-year-old. I just don't have any free time, yet I carve out time, no pun intended, to do fall events like pumpkin stuff, just because we like it that much. And so that was fun. And then Halloween was, of course, very fun. We finally got a break from rain, which is nice. But here we are in November now, talking about the budget. And that clip you just heard is from a fairly popular podcaster. His name is Peter St. Ange. He's not like one of the biggest in the world, but he's pretty popular. I've seen his stuff quite a bit, and he's kind of fun. He's kind of happy warrior kind of guy, and he speaks in these kind of melodic tones. I don't know. I'm sort of judging the way he does it more than the content. But in this case, what I played right there is interesting because it's talking about how there really is no date that it looks like this thing really has to be solved by. If Democrats are going to dig their heels in, Republicans don't have to do anything other than just keep passing that continuing resolution that says, look, we're actually trying to fund the government, because they are. They could get a handful of Democrats to come over and fund the government at its current level, and then it would be solved temporarily. But that, even that's not happening, as you know. Like, this isn't news. I'm just sort of catching up to where we are. What the news is for this weekend is that now all of a sudden SNAP benefits, food stamps, are not going out to 10% of the population. Now, I did some numbers, and this is what I want to talk about in this segment, because it's really frightening to me to look at the size of the federal government budget. It is unbelievably big. Unbelievably big. Even for somebody like me who looks at that kind of stuff all the time, whenever I re-look at it, it's like looking in a funhouse mirror, and I almost can't believe what I'm looking at every time I do it. With SNAP in particular, food stamp benefits, these are entitlement programs, of course, and let's get past the argument that a lot of people should not be on food stamps who are, and that we are subsidizing an entire lifestyle that we shouldn't be, because I already know that. You already know that. You're probably on board with that. Let's talk about the numbers of it, though. Food stamps is around 12% of the American population is on food stamps, whether that be because they're in a house, like their kids in a household, or they're the adults that are receiving the free money for food. They are on government assistance. They are buying food for free at your expense, or at debt expense, which is still your expense because it devalues your money. But either way, 12%. So I'm going to use some rounding here, because I know we're talking about numbers, and on the radio, that's tough to do. It's a lot easier to do on TV or on podcasts where there's visuals and you got whiteboards or you got graphics and stuff. I'm not doing that. I'm a one-man band here on the weekend on Wiggins America. So I'm just going to try to make it fun and easy to grasp with all these numbers. So we're going to round that and say 10% of the U.S. population is currently on food stamps getting free food. Then you look at what that means to the actual federal budget. That would be, and it is actually, about $100 billion a year is spent on people on food stamps. Extrapolate that out. Let's say America, and I'm not saying we should do this, but I'm just saying for a thought exercise, let's say you went full communism for a little while. Wouldn't work for a long time, but you did for a little while. And you said everybody in the country gets free food. Every single American gets free food. Probably illegals on there, because they're counting that in these numbers right now too. Again, separate issue. But every person here gets free food. What does that cost America? About $1 trillion a year if you fed every single person in the country for free every year would be $1 trillion. That sounds like a lot of money, right? It is a lot of money, because $100 billion is what you're actually spending, which is a tenth of that. So that's $1 trillion. The U.S. federal government budget is $8 trillion a year, of which we're taking in about 6.5. So we're going further into debt, about $1.5 trillion every year, and that's under Republican leadership. It's worse under Democrats. It's higher under Democrats, of course. Republicans have very little will to actually solve this, which is a different lament. We'll get there too. But right now, if you, again, full communism, you're feeding every citizen for free, $1 trillion of government spending per year goes to that. Yet somehow, the overall budget of our government is $8 trillion a year. So I looked up, well, that's got to be, a lot of that's got to be defense spending, because you do have to cover your population. You have to protect America, right? And we have the biggest defense spending budget in the world. And I'm not even necessarily fully against that, although there is a lot of waste and some corruption in the defense, whatever you want to call it, military-industrial complex, and I will call that out. Because that's not talking about individual service members. That is corruption. And that does exist. Anytime there's that much money, it's always going to exist. But how much spending does that take, even if you just left it at current levels? That's another 12 to 13%. So right now, with all defense spending, excuse me, and you spending 100% of the population being fed for free, which we're not doing, but let's say we are, that's still about 25% of your entire budget. So where's the rest of that money that is actually being spent going? Well, and then I looked up healthcare and everything that has to do with Medicaid and Medicare and all of the different Obamacare and blah, blah, blah of this ridiculous healthcare system that we have that also needs reform. How much are we spending on that? Roughly 27%, I will say 25 of our budget goes to healthcare currently. So again, adding this all up, I know like lots of numbers. Adding this all up, let's say all the citizens of the country who are using healthcare right now, plus everybody happens to be fed, because you're vastly expanding the food stamp program to the entire country, and all defense spending, still is half of your current budget. Where the hell is the rest of this money being spent? And some of that's theoretical money that I'm talking about. What we're talking about in reality is that I cannot figure out where 50% of the $8 trillion of the money that's being spent every year goes to. I can dig it up, but it'll say things real vague like, well, government salaries and this and that and blah, 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 and roads and green energy. But it's so vague that when you break it down to say all defense of your entire country, plus let's say every single person was fed and you kept the healthcare system the way it is, that accounts for 50 freaking percent of the budget. That's half of what's being spent. That means there is massive waste going on in our government. And we were so excited about DOGE getting in there and finding what it is. And you know what DOGE has found? They found little wastes. Where's the big, big waste that's happening? I'm so frustrated by both political parties not seeming to really have a will to do this. I think there are a lot of Republicans who actually do want to address this. They just know that the behemoth is so big that how do you address it? And this is really what got people excited about Trump and DOGE and Elon Musk, is that maybe they actually had the backbone to get in there and do something about it. But here we are, we're not quite a year into this presidency, and really nothing's been done on that front yet. And that is super frustrating, because that affects the future of all of our kids, of yourself, depending on how old you are. You can't float that boat forever. We're the biggest economy in the world. Our currency is the most dominant. So we've been able to weather it. But there is no political will to stop overspending, even under Republican bududgets, $1.5 trillion added to the debt every single year. By the way, last note on this, and then we'll take a break, is that we just hit $38 trillion in debt this month. You know when we hit $37 trillion? August. That's how fast it's happening. Part of that is this budget negotiation, because it will lower the amount that's going to the debt, but we're still going further into debt. We're just doing it slower under Republicans than we are with Democrats. At some point, that whole ship is going to sink. We've got to address that problem. So I'm coming up with a three-point plan. But I haven't revealed that yet, as if it's going to make some big difference. Here, Ryan Wiggins, Wiggins America, St. Louis, Missouri, 63101. I mean, I'm going to do it anyway. I might as well. I want to try to solve something. And hey, if it can plant the seeds out there. I mean, this is what we're all doing, is just trying our best. All right, we're going to take a short break here, come back and talk a little bit about miracles. I got a cool story to share with you. And then at the end of the show, Sergeant Thomas Becker is going to be in here. We're going into Veterans Day week, and I've had him on the show before. I wanted to invite him back to just tell stories, talk about Vietnam a little bit. We're going to have him in this week, and he's agreed to come back and talk to us again next week, too, kind of capping Veterans Day week. So stick around. It's going to be a great show.
Wiggins America.
Odyssey celebrates Earth Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Pay really, really close attention, which I doubt anybody is, but just in case, The 12% that I'm using to talk about the number of people on SNAP in the country, and then I said, oh, but let's do the whole country. It actually is the same math. I kind of lucked into that, but I'm just telling you that it's still 12% of the budget if you made it $1 trillion a year. Anyway, I doubt anybody cares about that, but there's one person who is probably questioning my math that I wanted to make sure I'm talking to you, sir or ma'am. Anyway, welcome back to Wiggins America after the break. I teased that we were going to do a story about miracles here, but I changed my mind, and we're going to do that next week. I've got a little miracle thing, and if you're excited about that, then I will tell the story, but I'm going to wait because we have so much in this show that I want to make sure that we do it all and make sure that we have time for Sergeant Thomas Becker at the end of the show going into Veterans Day, because I think that'll be great, and I want to make sure that we don't like crowd the end of the show for him. So between now and then, I forgot to tease this. I have to do election predictions. The big elections are going on this Tuesday, which is also Veterans Day. Am I a week ahead? Anyway, regardless, this Tuesday is for sure election day, and you got the big elections. It's an off year, but it's still like the big ones that you watch in the first year after a presidential election of New Jersey and Virginia mainly, but then you also have the New York primary this year, which usually is not super exciting. I guess with Eric Adams it was a little bit, but this year you got Mamdani. And I'll give you my official predictions on all of those really soon. But if you're like, why do I care about your stupid official predictions? Well, it's because so far, all of my predictions have been correct. And that is a weird thing to say, because it's very rare that you can say, I have hit 1,000. I've never missed in anything. But I can say that at this moment. Now, every time there's an election, I'm on the line again. And here we are again. But I'll pick them. And here's the thing. I don't really just pick. Like, if I came at all elections and said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pick every single state in the union in 2024, for instance. Well, really, if you narrow it down to about 9, 8, 7, around there is where you get your swing states. And those are the ones that matter. So you could say, well, I picked 90% of them right and still not have really done that well. So I don't do that. I don't pick the easy ones. I only pick the hard elections so that it's actually difficult. And I still gotten 1,000% back to all the way to 2022. And I do it every year, even these off year ones. So if you don't believe me, now in 22, I didn't do it. I didn't do it on the air. I sort of like made my picks and then judged them afterwards. And I thought, well, how does anybody know that I'm not just making it up after the fact? So instead, starting in 23, I started recording my picks here on the air, you know, and then it's recorded. And so that I can then come back after the election the next weekend on Wiggins America and play back my actual pick right there for you to hear. And you can judge for yourself whether I got it right. And so since 22, but really since 23, because that's when it's recorded, I haven't missed anything. Now, 23 was kind of weird because it was just a bunch of big ballot initiatives, a lot of them about abortion. And there were some elections in some southern states. I can hardly even remember what they were now. But I got all those right. There's about five of them, and I got them all right. And they're weird because they're sort of like national prominence, but localized because they don't affect you directly. This year will be the same. But then I came back, and so I'm not going to play those back, because even if I play them back, you wouldn't remember what the winners were because they're kind of obscure, and it was 23. But I am going to play back here for you to believe me, the November elections of last year, the national election, and then the one from April of this year, which hopefully you'll remember that too because it was pretty recent. But here was my official prediction for the House. You can say, well, it's a little bit vague, but it is. There's 435 seats, so I'm not going to go through the list, but here's what I said then.
Wiggins America.
Since we're going with a big Republican night, I do think Republicans keep the House. I don't think they'll keep it by a lot, but I do think they'll keep it, which gives them control of the executive branch and both chambers of Congress in my official prediction. So that's the House, and I tip my hand there, because here's what I said about the Senate. Now, they did, of course, if you remember, and we're still living under this, they did narrowly keep the House, and that's exactly what I said. Now, I didn't get into like the specific number, but I said A, that they will keep the House, because that was not for sure, and that they would barely keep the House, which ended up being pretty much spot on, right? Now, listen to how specific I got with the Senate, and you can tell me how accurate I was. Pennsylvania could easily go Republican here. Michigan shouldn't, but the polling's good for Rogers. That's the Republican there. And then Tammy Baldwin is the incumbent in Wisconsin, and she could easily lose just because Trump does well. So that this is where it gets really hard. So I'm going to go ahead and play the sounder here.
Wiggins America.
My official prediction for the Senate is that Republicans gain, after the baseline of 51, they gain one or two more seats. I'll go ahead and say two, and say they get 53 total. Now, that was tough because, you know, in the way, even I set it up there, some of those are a shot in the dark because they were so close. You remember even on election night, we were going, I don't know whether they're going to pick up Nevada. They didn't get Michigan. They didn't get, what was the other state? I don't think Arizona. But they did get Pennsylvania. And what was the other one? I can't remember. I just set it up. But anyway, there was 53 there that I picked. And you know how many senators there are for the Republicans in the Senate right now? 53. It was exact. So I kind of, you know, went through that there for you. And that's all. This is all literally from the week before the November election. I'm playing it back. You can go get the podcast if you don't believe me. But here's what I said about Trump. And I went really specific here, too, and picked. I went swing state by swing state and told you which ones would go to Trump and which ones wouldn't. I think you'll find it to be fairly accurate.
Wiggins America.
My official prediction is that Trump will win the presidency, and he will win it by quite a bit in the Electoral College. That means that, yes, if he's going to win Wisconsin, Arizona, Georgia, he's going to win the presidency. But I'm going to go ahead and be bold in predicting this, that he's going to win more than just those states, because he's going to overperform the polls again, and he's going to win Pennsylvania. He's going to win Texas easily, Wisconsin, I said that, and probably Michigan, although Michigan is a little tricky to me, and Nevada too. Like, those are the two that I'm like, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, just because of Philadelphia. Those are tough states, but I'm going to say he takes all of them. Well, that's what happened. So he took every swing state, and that's what I predicted. That's a weird prediction. That's a tough prediction, actually. You remember going into the election night, did you think he would actually take every swing state? I did, and that's what happened. So do you believe me yet? Well, you might say, Ryan, I hear you, but I hear your bias. You're a Republican. And Trump had a nice, the Republicans in general had a nice night in 2024. Yeah, well, they didn't in 23, and I picked those two. And they didn't in April of this year. The Wisconsin Supreme Court election, there was a lot of focus on that. Musk dumped a bunch of money into it. Here was my prediction about the Wisconsin Supreme Court from just April of this year. So as we go into this election, I'm going to tell you right now, Republicans are not going to win that election. At least they shouldn't. The only way that Republicans could still win this Wisconsin Supreme Court seat is if the ground game of Republicans has gotten so much better, mainly due to Turning Point Action, TPUSA, that's Charlie Kirk's, maybe a little bit of Scott Pressler in there. But if the ground game and the turnout game have gotten that much better, that they actually can turn out ahead of the race, you know, Election Day being Tuesday, then it's possible. But the numbers that I'm looking at, probably not. That's exactly what happened. They did not have a good enough ground game, and I said they wouldn't win it, and they didn't win it. So what do you think is going to happen in Virginia and New Jersey and the New York race? Well, let's take a short break.
Odyssey celebrates Earth Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now, Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, you ready for my official predictions? I'm going to give them to you. First of all, this is last year and this year we're still in it. A high watermark for Republicans. This is a very good season for Republicans, which means that this election, New Jersey, Virginia, and New York, should be good years for Democrats. This is like the pullback election. This is what it usually looks like. In 2021, that's how a Republican, Glenn Youngkin, took the governor's seat and all the other seats in Virginia, is that it was a pullback election against Democrats in that time because Biden was in office. This should be the reverse of that. So if you see, but New Jersey, New York, obviously, and Virginia are all Democrat areas. These are all Democrat states and cities. So they already should be Democrat. So what I'm looking for in this, you may not like my predictions very much. I'll tell you that right now if you're Republican. But what I'm looking at here is, can Republicans keep it close? Because I don't actually think they're going to win much of this, and I'll get into that in a second with the official. But if they can keep it within 3 points, 5 points, I would say if it's under three, then Republicans have done a great job in Democrat states, because these should be Democrat seats anyway, and that indicates that the national mood has not shifted away from Republicans that much, and that means a lot going into next year, and as is. So Democrats would celebrate if they won, but if it's kind of close, if it's under 3 points, they'll be nervous. And that's really all I'm looking for here, is just to test the national mood, because I don't think Republicans are going to do that great in these elections. I know people are really excited about them, and Cittarelli in New Jersey is a really, he's a good candidate, and he's got a good ground game, too. The Virginia Republican candidate, Winsome Earl Sears, she goes by, I don't think she's actually run a fantastic campaign. She seems like she's a good person and she'd be a great governor, but I don't think she's a great campaigner. But anyway, all that aside, I'm not just looking at polls here. I've also been looking at early vote data, vote by mail data. I'm a radio host, can you tell? And all of this, and I'm doing all this data talk, and here we go. And so, all right, here are my official predictions.
America. That is wonderful news.
We'll start with New York. Mamdani walks away with that one pretty easy. I don't really know the points. I'm not watching that one as close because it's going to be kind of a blowout. I don't think Cuomo really comes that close. So Mamdani is going to be your de facto nominee and therefore your next mayor of New York City. We can talk about what that means later, but I'm just doing the predictions now. New Jersey, Cittarelli versus, what's her name, Cheryl? Yeah. That one's also not going to be a win for Republicans. Cittarelli is a great candidate, but he is not going to pull off an upset there, even though he's got a lot of Democrat mayors in New Jersey. And New Jersey is moving rightward very, very, very slowly, but they're not there yet, especially not in a year like this. They could in an opposite environment. I would say this actually might flip in an opposite environment, but it's not. This is what it is. So Cheryl, the Democrat, is going to take the governor of New Jersey. And then finally, Virginia is where it gets hard, because the Virginia governor race to me isn't hard. This is, again, going to be another Democrat victory. Spanberger is going to beat Winsome Sears. I think that one actually pretty easily. I don't think they're going to, if she can keep that under 3 points, Winsome Sears, then Republicans have had a really good night. I don't think that's going to happen, though. The tough one is, so that's another Democrat pickup there, actually, from Youngkin. The tough one is going to be this attorney general seat with this guy, Jones, versus the incumbent, which is Meares. Jones is the Democrat who's talked about murdering his opponents and in texts over and over, and then has had to apologize for it and all this. Well, right now, Meares is leading in all the polls. My gut feeling just isn't good about this, though. But I'm going to go with the data and say that somehow Meares, the Republican, actually does hold the attorney general seat of Virginia simply based on the data. But my gut says that's going to be a lot closer than it is. Right now, the spread is almost 4 points, that the Republicans should win by 4 points. I think it'll be less than that. Leading up to Veterans Day, I have long wanted to have Sergeant Thomas Becker back in studio, and he is here. Sergeant Thomas Becker, thank you for returning.
Thank you, Ryan.
So last time, it was what, probably August? July, August that we were talking last time?
You know, old people like me don't remember anything.
Well, I don't remember either. So it's been a couple months. And I said, why don't we have you back close to Veterans Day? Because we did a couple segments with you last time. And I said, look, I'm about halfway through your book right now, and now I've had a chance to finish your book, of course, which is called Sergeant Becker, A Vietnam Story, 82nd Airborne Division. You are in Vietnam, and tell us the years again.
1968 and 1969. I just missed the 68 Tet Offensive, which was the height of the war.
Okay.
And in fact, my unit that I joined, my battalion had 85% casualties during the Tet Offensive.
My gosh.
They'd been there 3 months before me. So I was a replacement sergeant. They ran out of sergeants, of course. And so when I got there, I think there were 24 men left in the company out of over 100. And two of them, when I got there, they were coming off the helicopters. Two of them were in body bags.
How did they decide that you were just a sergeant?
I went to sergeant school after AIT, Advanced Intensive Training. I volunteered for it in order to stay out of the war as long as I could. And then I went to demolition school, and then I went to airborne school, all just to stay out of the war. I didn't want any part of this.
So going into, like I said, we're talking to you going into Veterans Day here because you are a veteran. And, of course, I'm among many who are saying thank you for your service for this time of year, especially.
Appreciate that.
What, we were talking off air, why did you have to write the book? I mean, there's some quotes that I actually could pull from here that I wanted to ask you about, but I'll ask you that first.
It's just too good a story. I just had to tell it. It's like, you know, how could someone be so lucky? You know, these kind of things don't happen to most people. And, you know, people have asked me, how were you able to do this? And it's like, I didn't have a choice. It's either do what I was supposed to do or lay down and pound the ground. I mean, those are really my only choices I had.
Well, I mean, it's a story of perseverance, not just in the war, but since the war. You start at the end here. I'm going to read a little bit. I hope that's okay. I'm reading your book to you. It's been 54 years since I left Vietnam. That would be, 56 now, right?
56 now, yes.
You wrote this 2 years ago. And then I skip ahead here. I built a heavy, thick wall in the back of my mind to conceal these troubling memories. I had terrible PTSD when I came home. I had 3 to 5 nightmares every night for over 3 years. Then slowly they diminished.
Time heals wounds.
How about now?
Oh, much better.
How much do you think about it now?
Every day.
Do you think about any people in particular?
Michelle.
Yeah.
It just tore me up that I could not adopt her, that they wouldn't let me.
Can you tell that story a little bit just for context?
Well, I reached a very low point mentally after I'd been in the war. I think I only had 6 weeks left or so. And by that time, instead of one squad to take care of, I think by that time I had 6 because of the loss of sergeants. And I lost one of my best friends. And it really hurt. And then after that, this is hard.
Yeah.
I almost had my throat cut one night while I was sleeping. And I managed to, I was very fast and very, you know, very quick. And the guy trying to cut my throat was moving slowly because he was trying to be quiet and all that. So I managed to stab him instead with my knife, and I stabbed him many, many times. And it just messed me up. I was at that, I think after that, I just wanted to kill almost anybody that looked at me wrong. Just in such a terrible terrible frame of mind. And so the captain, realizing this, sent me off to the nearest battalion base camp. Wasn't even a division, it was a battalion. I don't even know what battalion, it wasn't ours, for a 10 days of getting my head back together. And there was no psychologist or psychiatrist to help me. He just gave me 10 days off, which is really strange. That's a long time.
10 days?
10 days. I mean, you know, give you a three-day pass is one thing, but 10 days. And he didn't say why or anything, just sent me there. And I was supposed to report for a meeting every day, and that was it. The rest of the time was by myself. And I finally figured out why. But I met this in the town next to the base camp. I saw this little orphan, about 5 years old. She was half French, half Vietnamese, and she was just the sweetest, most beautiful little angel you'd ever want to meet, you know. And I couldn't, you know, I quickly realized, since she was playing all by herself every day, I did this for 9 days in a row, spent time with hours every afternoon. I spent until it was time for her to eat dinner and go to bed. You know, they rang the bell. So I couldn't understand why this little girl was always smiling and always singing and so happy when she was obviously ostracized from all the other children because she was different. You know, they had their own racial problems. And it really helped me because, you know, here I was just full of hatred. I thought, why isn't she mad? You know, she shouldn't be happy. So I kind of, you know, I kind of had an epiphany, shall we say. And it kind of, that was what brought me back to reality. And so I owed her so much.
I want to ask you for advice. I want to ask you to speak to anybody who has ever just experienced, I mean, I don't know anybody who's experienced the kind of trauma you're talking about. So you're the best person to speak on this topic. But people have, you know, trauma of their own kinds. We throw that word around so much anymore that it's, yes, it almost doesn't mean anything. But I'm talking about real trauma. What you're saying is extreme. It's extreme soul-wrenching trauma. And it's not just that story you just told. I mean, I read the book. There's a lot more to what you did in those 2 years, especially.
Yeah.
What do you say to somebody who comes up to you and says, look, I'm looking to heal? And it may be a completely different circumstance, but they want to heal from something that's happened in their past. What do you say?
Number one, stop thinking about your own stinking self. Start thinking of helping someone else. Sounds crazy. When you help others, you help yourself. That would be the number one thing. I sign all my books. Life is not much worth living without love and courage and honor. And you need all three to get through life, not just through a war. Honor is really about respect. You have to respect yourself. Or nobody else is going to respect you. Courage, I mean, we need courage every day to do the things we need to do. And if you don't have any kind of love in your heart, well, you know, there's really no sense living. Love is what makes a difference. So by helping others, you get that love. And that makes everything better.
Selflessness.
Yes.
Because then you're not, you can't focus on yourself if you're focused, yes, on others or God, or just not focused on yourself.
Yes. You know, and it doesn't have to be anything big, just little things. You see an old lady trying to get 50-pound bag of dog food in her car at the grocery store. You know, you go over there and you help her. It doesn't have to be somebody you know. It's probably better somebody you don't know. Today, I'm driving here and there was a lot of traffic, and some guy wanted to make a left turn across two lanes of traffic, and I could see he'd been there a while, so I stopped, and, you know, I held my hand to say, no, not yet, not yet, and then motioned him on, let him go. Little thing, made me feel good. You know, all those little, you need to do that every day.
That seems like a little thing, but letting somebody across two lanes of traffic.
But I didn't want him to get creamed by the guy's horn stopping. Yeah. So I, you know, held my right hand up. Nope, not yet. Not yet.
That's probably a great lesson for all of us, just with traffic in general.
Yes.
Because I just about lost it yesterday leaving here. But
we're always in too big a hurry. Yeah. So we need to, you know, help others. You know, we're all in the same boat. So, you know, just because you're in a car, you can't see the person, doesn't mean they're not a good person. Doesn't mean that they don't need help.
The book is Sergeant Becker, A Vietnam Story, 82nd Airborne Division. Sergeant Thomas Becker is who you are listening to right now. We are, unfortunately, out of time for this week. But like I said, going into Veterans Day, Mr. Becker has agreed to return next week. So
yes.
I am glad to be able to ask some follow-up questions. And in particular, there's another story in the book that I want to dive into with you. Because, my gosh, I can see. I mean, you said at the beginning, you can see why you wrote the book. There is a lot there. Recommend you get that book, actually. Sergeant Becker, A Vietnam Story, 82nd Airborne Division. And we will stop there. You can get the podcast by typing in Wiggins America to hear all the rest of the show. And we'll see you next week.
Odyssey celebrates Earth Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
I'm Mark Selinger, producer and one of the hosts of The Moth Podcast. For nearly two decades, The Moth has brought live storytelling to stages around the world and to millions of listeners. These are real people telling true stories from their lives. Stories about a lost family recipe, about working to free a wrongfully convicted man, about realizing you need to leave your May-December romance. Stories that will move you, surprise you, make you laugh. Stories you can't forget. Join us. Follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.